From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, paranormal investigator Rosemary Ellen Guiley with all kinds of fascinating things. Here's what's happening. More than a week after a fire ignited in Ventura County near the Los Angeles area, destroying hundreds of homes, displacing thousands as it grew into a massive inferno, firefighters are now in a race to protect the pristine coastal communities of neighboring Santa Barbara County before a shift in powerful winds forecast for this weekend. If they do not, it could be even a bigger disaster than it already is. Well, Americans are spending more this holiday season. November retail sales up 0.8% from the prior month. That's good. Economists saw only a 0.3 increase, so they are delighted with what's going on there. Put your cell phone down and keep it away from your pillow, according to the California Department of Public Health. Smartphone use continues to increase in the U.S., especially among children. And the health department said some people and health professionals have concerns about the radio frequency energy emitted from cell phones. Now, the scientific community has not yet reached a consensus on the risks of cell phone use, but the health department said research suggests long-term, extensive use may affect health. Hey, send text messages as much as you can. The Federal Communications Commission has voted now to repeal the Obama-era net neutrality rules, a move that Republicans say would preserve a free and open Internet, but has triggered protests from consumer groups, Internet companies, and Democratic lawmakers. Let's check in with the expert on the Internet, Lauren Weinstein. Well, they did it, Lauren.
Yeah, they did. Let me put it this way. To paraphrase from Hamlet, something is rotten in Washington, D.C. Here we have tax legislation to make the ultra-rich ultra-richer, and we have an FCC commissioner who makes the incredibly powerful and rich ISPs even more powerful and gives them the ability, and this is what they get, they have the ability to censor our speech on the Internet, block and throttle the websites they don't like. And otherwise, they're being given the power now to become even bigger jerks than they always were. Now, this was a party-line vote. The GOP commissioners, led by the chairman, voted to kill net neutrality. And the reality is here that the Democratic commissioners voted to keep it.
That's
and protect
right. Three to two. 3-2 vote.
The polls, there's polls on this. They're just absolutely fascinating. They say that 83% of Americans opposed this action today. And that includes at least 3 out of 4 Republicans. So this is an incredibly and it's obvious why. Who loves their ISP?
Well, let me ask you this, Lauren. Yeah. Will those of us who are on the Internet a lot because of what we do and our work and everything, are we going to see a change? Will we start seeing strange things happen and yeah. We'll go, hey, that's weird. What's going on here?
I think it's going to start small, and as they see what they can get away with, they'll push in more and more. Because under this new regime that's been pushed through now, they can do pretty much anything they want as long as they are, quote, transparent, unquote.
All right, give us an example, though, of what could happen that's not good for us.
Well, for example, let's say there's a website, a news site, that has news stories that one of these ISPs doesn't like.
Okay.
Under this new set of guidelines, new set of rules, they can block it.
Wow.
They could block it, more likely, and blocking it's kind of obvious, right? But they could slow it down. They could make it so that people, you know, it's inconvenient to use it. They can do all of these things. There's no protection at all now.
Now, could they have done it in the past anyway? Let me ask you this. I mean, what if, and they do, there was a website devoted to ISIS, devoted to terrorism, devoted to hate. Would those ISPs be able to shut them down?
Anything involving extremism like that falls into a different category. I mean, that's the simple. There's a lot of complications to this.
Whose definition is that?
It has to do with whether or not it's legal. There's a different definition of legality in terms of a site that's promoting something illicit. Like if you had what's a good example? It's like the dark net. Okay, we know about the dark net, which is mostly illegal things. And it's clear, and law enforcement knows they're illegal, and the legitimate ISPs try to stay away from that.
I've got a friend who works for law enforcement in the St. Louis area. one of his responsibilities is to peruse the internet looking for stuff that I don't even want to repeat on this program.
Of course.
But it's there. It's on the internet. So would these ISPs be able to block those things? And if they do, that's not bad.
They can. The thing is that those ISPs can block those right now.
Uh-huh. Why aren't they?
That's the key thing. Well, you know, you have to kind of follow the money with all of this.
Okay.
I mean, you know, it's the kind of situation where, you know, what's the payback in blocking the dark net as opposed to what's the payback in blocking a news site when you can get the news site to pay you to unblock them, but you're probably not going to be able to take money from the illegal operations to unblock them.
What a mess.
It's a complete mess. Now, what's going to happen now, it's already started. It's going to the courts. There's a big multi-state lawsuit that's already starting to spin. But ultimately, Congress should fix this. I mean, remember those poll numbers. Everybody hates this. If Congress would start protecting us instead of the super rich, they could fix this. They could restore net neutrality or whatever you want to call it, so that it's fair to consumers and subscribers, and that's where we should put our energy, into getting Congress to do the right thing with this.
You got it. Lauren, thank you so much, and thank you for giving us this information all along. You're the one that brought us this story, and I appreciate it. The world's oldest man has celebrated his 113th birthday in Spain, happy birthday, with cake, milk, and visits from his 15 great-grandkids, Francisco Oliveira, who also has 4 children and 9 grandchildren, attributes his long life to a diet of homegrown vegetables and a daily glass of red wine. While that story we've been following is still a buzzing through scientists, this asteroid or whatever it is, some thinking maybe it's extraterrestrial, who knows, Peter Davenport from the National UFO Reporting Center. Have you been following that story, Peter?
I have, and it's got me a little unsettled, particularly in light of some of the information I'm going to be sharing tonight, George.
Okay.
This has been an exciting and unsettling week for ufology. Later in my report, I will focus on an incident that occurred over the United States last Saturday, but I'd like to begin by sharing a few words of gratitude to a couple of deserving souls. One is our webmaster, Christian Stepien, webmaster for the National UFO Reporting Center now for 22 years. He and his wife live in Santa Barbara in the Montecito area, and their house is right in the pathway of those fires. They were burned out about 6 or 7 years ago, and they're now in a similar situation. But despite their adversity, George, he has managed to update the website on 3 occasions this week while on the run from remote locations. He's done a heroic job. If people would like to send a note of thanks to Christian, his email address is webmaster@ufocenter.com. The second deserving soul I'd like to mention is none other than Richard Surrett, your erstwhile weekend stand-in host.
We love the guy.
Who this past Sunday night, he took a chance with me. At the outset of the program, he alerted the Coast listeners to what I consider to have been a very important sighting incident that had occurred the night before, Saturday night, December 9th, and that's what I'd like to focus on in my report tonight.
Sure.
At 5:27 p.m. Pacific time last Saturday, again the 9th of December, I received a call from an adult male in Edgefield, South Carolina, reporting a cluster of very peculiar lights, I think principally red lights, although I'm not sure, he hasn't submitted a written report yet. But those lights appear to have covered the breadth of the United States, George, passing from South Carolina to Illinois, to Missouri, to Kansas, to Colorado, Wyoming, Montana, Idaho, Utah, Washington State, perhaps Oregon, and California, all in about an hour or an hour and a half. And I couldn't begin to touch on all of the data I've received. There have been about 70 reports submitted to our center, some of them just unbelievably dramatic as to what people saw. But the curious thing about all of this is early this week, the U.S. Air Force tried to convince a television station and apparently succeeded in doing so convinced them that it had been caused by a flight of C-17 heavy four-engine military transport aircraft. With limited time here, I would encourage anybody who's interested in this incident to go to our website, ufocenter.com, start reading the roughly 70 reports I've received, and decide for themselves whether those reports could have been the result of a flight of C-17 aircraft, all apparently flying in tight formation at night, George. I've been a commercial pilot for 40 years now. The thought of being in tight formation with other aircraft at night,
that's scary.
Just makes my skin crawl. Also, nobody reported any green lights. As you probably know, any aircraft flying after dark, after sundown, has to have a red light on the left wingtip and a green light on the right wingtip.
Mm-hmm.
But nobody reported green lights, even though they were seen flying from the witnesses left to right. They should have seen a green light. And the last point I would like to make is the Air Force said they went from South Carolina to somewhere in Colorado. They didn't specify, as far as I know. But that's pretty unusual, given the fact that these objects made excursions in Missouri, Wyoming, Montana, and California, perhaps Nevada. Their story just doesn't fit. And I'd like to close by imploring any of the Coast listeners who might have seen those objects last Saturday night to please submit a detailed written report of what they saw, and we'll put the pieces together and report on it in the future again.
And Peter, in about 10 days, there's going to be an object in the sky that's going to confuse a lot of people. They may look like reindeer, don't you think?
I reported them, as you may recall, a couple Christmases ago from North Pole, Alaska.
Yep, I remember that. That was great. Peter, we'll talk to you next week.
Yeah,
Peter Davenport from the National UFO Reporting Center. Is there a dark side of science? Stick around as I talk with Dr. J. Marvin Herndon next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. George Norrie with you. Dr. J. Marvin Herndon back with us. He is a scientist with a strong and yet broad background, originally trained as a physicist. He earned his PhD in nuclear chemistry and received postdoctoral training in geochemistry and cosmochemistry from the world-class master scientists who had themselves learned from other masters. A couple books out, Herndon's Earth and the Dark Side of Science and Maverick's Earth and Universe. And Marvin, welcome back to the program and happy holidays to you, my friend.
Well, thank you and to you, and I'm glad to be back. We have some really, really interesting things to share tonight, and things that people may find stranger than UFOs, but things that are true and sadly true.
Is there a dark side to science?
Oh, yes. I discovered this, back around 1980 or so. I had just published a really important paper in the Proceedings of the Royal Society of London about the inner core of the Earth not being what people had thought for 40 years. And I thought, well, while I was waiting for it to be published, I thought, gee, you know, when there'll be this debate, there'll be discussion, and probably the people that have the big labs will take the idea and run with it and leave me in the dust. That didn't happen. Silence. It was as if the paper never was published. Now, I did get a congratulatory letter from the woman who had discovered the inner core, but the scientific community just totally ignored it, and then soon thereafter, when my grants came up for renewal, they didn't get renewed for no good reason. I was excommunicated.
Yeah.
And what I discovered at that point is that science is, as it's practiced, and this is a long time ago now, it's not the search for truth. It's a consensus conformity. You have to agree with the government-funded science. You have to not challenge the work that people do that are funded by the government. And if you do, you'll be cut out. So people have, even since this time, people have been stirring in the same confused pot of ideas and not making any progress. Because science is all about finding out what's wrong with present thinking and improving it, challenging ideas. So this is what I discovered, and of course, I could do science mm-hmm. on my own dime in a limited way, but make one discovery after another because there was no competition, because the mainstream scientific community were still stirring in these 1960s, 1940s ideas. And so I made lots of discoveries and about how the world works, how the earth functions. But all of this, in a sense, was training for me to be able to deal with the present problems that affect all of us. Now, it may not be a whole lot of interest to some people why the inside of the earth is not what people think it might be, but the problems we face today in the skies above us, and I'm referring to the particulate trails. Some people call them chemtrails.
Right.
This is a serious, serious matter. And the scientific community pretends that this is not happening.
It's happening, and we've been talking about it, Marvin, as you know, on this program for years. Yet everybody outside of this show, I think, is in denial about it.
Well, the scientific community learned. Well, look at it this way. Why did I get excommunicated? Well, I crossed the line.
What was that line you crossed?
Well, it was the line of challenging the consensus mentality.
And the mainstream mentality?
The mainstream mentality. And I challenged that. And so people, scientists aren't fools. I mean, they realize that to get funding as a scientist, you have to get grants. And your job, if you're a university professor, depends on your getting grants.
Sure.
And so you learn very quickly, you don't contradict the consensus view.
Who keeps the grant money, by the way, Marvin? The university? Does the scientists get a little bit? What happens to it?
Well, the universities get a big cut, an amount that's roughly 70% of the
top of the
amount. So, for example, if a scientist needs $100,000 to do his research, pay for equipment, personnel, things mm-hmm. like that. The university then gets about 100, and they get an additional 70,000 or so for overhead, for providing a room, which is the overhead also makes it possible.
And the room's there anyway.
The room's there anyway, so it's for the bureaucracy to spend, and so it's not a healthy balance. But the real problem is, who determines whether a scientist gets funded?
That's right. Good point.
Now, back before World War II, there was very little government support for science. World War II came along, and some incredible progress was made by government-supported science. So toward the end of the war, Franklin Roosevelt mm-hmm. suggested...
Don't age yourself, huh?
I'm telling you, suggested that there should be a way to fund civilian science. And so there was a report made by Vannevar Bush called Science, the Endless Frontier. And it laid out a plan for this.
And it was a good plan, wasn't it?
It was a good plan. It really was. And in 1951, the National Science Foundation was established. And they did something very wrong. They wrote the rules on how the government should fund civilian science. And one rule was that the proposals for funding would be evaluated by your competitors. and in secret.
Who had no motive to approve you.
Who had, and indeed, had motive to disapprove you.
Because hold on for a sec. We're at the break, and we're going to come back in just a moment here on Coast to Coast AM with more. Well, welcome back. Couple little notes here for you. We've got our own YouTube channel going now, offering complimentary hour-long excerpts. It's all free. Just go take a look at it. At our website, coasttocoastam.com, click on the YouTube icon at the top, or if you're simply on YouTube in their search, put in Coast to Coast AM Official. You got to put that official in there. Coast to Coast AM Official on the YouTube search page, and that'll pop up, and people are loving that. So take advantage of that if you would. And welcome back to Coast with Dr. J. Marvin Herndon as we're talking about the dark side of science. Marvin, you were saying so when some scientists are peer-reviewed to get grants, sometimes the people who are giving the approval for the grants are people who are, I guess, on the other side, huh?
Well, they're trying to get the money, too.
I mean, it's a conflict of interest, isn't it?
Well, of course. But that's the main flaw in this whole system, and this is a flaw that's been going on for what, 50 years.
Jeez.
So you've got a whole scientific community that's perverted, that's twisted. Now, in certain narrow areas, it may not have as severe effect, but when someone comes along with a fundamentally different idea or data. Then, what you'd call a paradigm-changing idea, those are the people who suffer. And yet those are the people who need to be able to do their science.
Exactly.
But, you know, it's not the problem with the community that I really want to address. It's the consequence of that. Because what it has led to is a scientific community. I'm talking mostly of the geoscience community, the earth science community, the atmospheric science, the climate scientists, who refuse to acknowledge the now near daily, near global aerial spraying of particulates into the atmosphere.
And let's talk about that, Marvin, exactly what you think is going on. First of all, for those doubters, I'm going to ask you directly, yes or no, are there chemtrails?
Oh, yes, indeed. Although there are perhaps better words for it. Sometimes if you go to the web and you Google the term chemtrail, you'll get much disinformation. There's a concerted effort to hide what is happening to deceive the public. And especially to deceive the public in terms of the potential adverse health risks.
Jeez. Now, in your opinion, what do you think is being sprayed, and how do you know that?
Okay, let me suggest to the listeners that they go to my website, which is nuclearplanet.com.
All right.
Scroll to pad the first section's just biographical. But the next section is called Ongoing Coal Fly Ash Toxic Chemical Geoengineering. And there's a bunch of information there, and there's some pictures, and there's even some music videos that describe what is happening. Now, I was the first person in the scientific community to publish in the peer-reviewed scientific literature on the composition and health risks of the aerial spraying.
Did they think you were a nut?
No, but the first thing that happened was that the editor was literally assaulted by a disinformation professional.
Oh, boy.
Lie after lie after lie and demanding retraction. Well, this editor was a man of integrity. He sent me the comments for my written response, mm-hmm. and he would have published both the criticisms and my comments, but the disinformation guy backed off. The next two papers in public health journals, not just one disinformation, this is the papers were peer-reviewed and published. When the editors and journals personnel were assaulted by a team of disinformation people with lies. And these people, I mean, that's what they do. They lie. They're professionals at it, and they're good at it. And to show you how good they are, when somebody challenges my work, I should have the chance to respond.
Absolutely.
Well, in both cases, the public health journals retracted the articles without ever allowing me to see the comments. And in doing so, they posted some of the disinformation remarks, which, of course, makes me look bad.
Right.
But then I pay a big price for this, because the disinformation people have smeared my reputation throughout the web. They've marginalized and falsified my Wikipedia page, but they haven't stopped me. I've found another colleague, Mark Whiteside, MD, MPH, the medical director of the Florida Department of Health in Monroe County.
He agrees with you, doesn't he?
He co-authors papers with me.
Uh-huh.
And I'm telling you, this is a public health professional. Monroe County's where Key West is, for those who might not know. Everybody knows where Key West is. Margaritaville. but no, seriously. So you go on my website, there's a place to click onto the list of publications.
But again, how did you get to the point where you believed we were being sprayed?
Well, I live in San Diego, California.
All right.
And you might remember years ago, the skies were always azure blue.
Yes, they were.
Very rarely did we ever have clouds, except when a storm came up from Mexico or something. And I started really noticing it about 2014, shortly after Obama was reelected. I started noticing daily spraying. Trails.
Tic-tac-toe shape, everything.
And a contrail, which is the big lie, is they're jet contrails, which is ice crystals. But ice crystals don't stay around a long time in the dry, warm areas over San Diego. But these trails, they're long, they spread out. For a while, they might look like cirrus clouds, and then they end up being a white haze in the sky.
And they just linger.
And they linger, but they do settle. That's why they have to spray every day, because they end up mixing with the air we breathe.
And then it settles down on us physically, too, doesn't it?
Oh, God, it settles down on us, yes. And so this was my first concern. Well, what is it? And there are a lot of serious citizens around the world who were concerned about this a long time before me. And they would, for example, the thought was that, well, maybe this is aluminum that's being sprayed.
Right, or barium.
Or
right?
Barium or strontium. Well, they would measure, they would take rainwater samples, send them to a lab, mostly just to test for aluminum, sometimes for barium, and rarely for strontium. Well, I got to looking at this, and I got to thinking, well, why would these elements be in rainwater? Well, it's that they're extracted from the particles that are being put up there. I mean, if they were spraying powdered tea leaves, then when it rained, you'd have tannic acid and all the flavor chemicals that make tea. It'd be raining down tea. Well, so I started having measurements made, and it's more than just aluminum, barium, and strontium. It's a whole bunch of elements, so this began be the problem. What is the spraying? Well,
and why?
The why is, yes, those are the two questions, and I'll give you the answers right now.
All right.
The scientific evidence that's in these papers indicates that the data is consistent with coal fly ash. That's the toxic waste product of burning coal. Now, when coal is burned to make electricity, the heavy ash settles, but the formed in the gases above the vapor is formed a light ash that has most of the toxic elements in it.
Okay.
And these are so bad that there are regulations that in Western countries that do not allow these to go out of the smokestack. They have to go through like an electrostatic precipitator and be trapped and be sequestered. And the evidence is consistent with this material is what they're being sprayed.
Now, is this disposal of this stuff, or what would the reason then be to spray it on us?
Well, from a practical standpoint, it forms in just the ideal size grains, micron and submicron, so you don't have to do much processing. And it's a waste product that's trapped already. So it makes an ideal substance for spraying. Now, to get to the question of why they are spraying, you probably remember back a long time ago, people talked about seeding clouds with silver iodide.
Right, to make it rain.
Or dry ice to make it rain. Well, the military has long wanted to prevent the fall of rain. And that's what they do. If you put fine particles of material in the air where clouds form, the little tiny droplets of water are either absorbed or blocked from coalescing, getting big enough to fall as rain. So it inhibits the fall of rain.
Or does it change also the complexity of the cloud where it doesn't even form?
Well, it changes a lot of things, and ultimately, there are other things that it does. You might think, or people might try to deceive you into thinking, well, it reflects some sunlight away. I mean, this is what the geoscientists are trying to promote, future geoengineering, where they put particles in the air to serve as a sunshade for the Earth. Well, this is nonsense, because what happens when you put particles in the air is that, yes, some solar radiation will be reflected, but some will be absorbed. And the bombardment of the particles with air molecules will take some of that heat away. Some of it will be re-radiated. So it'll heat the atmosphere. Moreover, it keeps heat from leaving the Earth. You probably remember back many years ago in California, if you were invited to a barbecue at night and you arrived in, 5 o'clock in the afternoon, you'd have a jacket with you.
Yeah.
Because when the sun went down,
it's chilly. Desert chilly.
Yes. Well, it doesn't do that anymore.
Not as bad. You're right.
Because these particles, they trap heat from leaving the Earth.
Okay, so assuming they're doing all this and they're spraying this ash to minimize rain, why do it to us?
Okay, well, one thing it does is it heats the atmosphere and it keeps the Earth's heat from leaving. In other words, it causes global warming. And the UN and the scientific community, the so-called
scientific. Global warming may very well be man-made.
It is. So this is the biggest science-based scam ever perpetrated. And it's the UN is behind it 100%. Their 1,500 scientists are claiming from their phony baloney models that do not take into account the spraying.
So, Marvin, are you saying that they are increasing the temperature of the planet, creating this climate change? And now, of course, I'm going to ask you if it's all about money.
Oh, it's about a lot of things. For example, and let me say they're causing not only the heating, but climate chaos. Okay, and you, we'll talk about that in a minute with respect to California. But so who is to benefit from this? Well, the United Nations would like to, everybody wants to blame it on fossil fuel use, CO2.
Yep.
Which is the big lie. They're causing global warming and with the spraying and blaming it on CO2. And the United Nations, of course, wants to claim reparations for other countries from to extract taxes. They want to control sovereign nations' ability to utilize fuel. And they also want to enrich themselves and their interconnected friends. And then another.
No wonder this got you into hot water.
Oh, well, this isn't, we're not done yet, George. There are those who want a single world government, and they would benefit. Now, if you want to, a single, and I'm sure there are a lot of, maybe hundreds of multinational corporations and maybe a dozen multinational banks that could benefit from a one world government. They wouldn't have to deal with, you know, the nonsense from the U.S. and Great Britain and places like that. But they can only succeed in having a one world government if they destroy nations like the United Nations, like the United States. And this is one way to do it. They create havoc. They destroy atmosphere, agriculture rather. They destroy citizens' health. They contaminate the environment with mercury and other toxins. They poison plants and trees. They disrupt the ozone layer. I mean, this material is terrible. And when you breathe these particles that you can't even see, they're so small, they go deep into your lungs and settle in your lungs. And they have all sorts of toxic materials in them. I mean, they have chromium, they have arsenic.
Oh, my God. Stay with us, Stan. We're going to come back. J. Marvin Herndon is with us, and we want you to stand up for your rights, folks, and make the call next on Coast to Coast AM.